First, let me introduce Catherine Wigginton in the back, is the tall, very pregnant woman in the back. Catherine was one of the producers on the film and was active in managing the relationships with the kids. I also want to acknowledge two other people that were of great help to us. Jerry Lucido, the director of admissions, I know that's not his exact title, at the University of Southern California, and Steve Farmer at the University of North Carolina were very helpful in guiding us during this process. If you will leave your business cards in the back, we're going to do a drawing and we'll give away an institutional copy to your institution of the film. And so we will do a drawing. And I understand that we have Leo's guidance counselor here, too. Thank you. Again, I'm Alston Gardner. I was the producer of the film. Let me introduce my two panelists. We're going to talk go over some questions for the next 15 or 20 minutes, and then we'll open it up to the group. On my far left is Cindy Slack. She's the program director at the Decision Education Foundation, a nonprofit focused on improving the lives of young people by improving the quality of their decisions. The Decision Education Foundation and Cindy just finished a curriculum for high school guidance counselors that incorporate these principles of good decision making in the college decision. She taught history, economics, and art history courses at independent schools in the Philadelphia area for many years. Received her BA in history from Trinity College and her master's from Wesleyan. To my left is Steve Goodman, is a private educational consultant in Washington, D.C. Over the last 20 years, Steve has coached over 1,700 students and their families through the college search and application process. He also trains high school guidance counselors and leads missions workshops. He's the co-author of a great book called College Admissions Together, It Takes a Family. I think the film certainly touched on that very issue. This book helps parents and students together as a family make this college decision. He taught at Wharton and at Haverford and has degrees from Duke, Penn, and Southern Cal. I'd like to give each of you a chance just to maybe offer some comments, and then I'll have some specific questions. Cindy, if you could lead us off.
Great. Thanks, Alston. This is the third time I've seen this movie, and every time I just get this knot in my stomach. And at one point, Molly has this great line where she says, "I begin to wonder if this is all worth it." It's fascinating to me, particularly as a person who works with kids and decision education, that we ask kids to make this incredibly major strategic decision at some point in their senior year, yet rarely have we done laid the groundwork, laid the foundation for them to really understand how to make this decision. And the first time I saw the movie, I was struck not only by the fact that the kids have difficulty with managing this decision, and it really is an extensive process, but their parents don't know either. And as a parent who's gone through this too, let me tell you, I see myself in there. So it's fascinating to me when we watch this because I see the stress that all these people go through. And one of the things that we work with, when we work with teachers and students to teach better decision-making, it's about empowering kids. It's about enabling them to think through this. And it's also about thinking about how strategic decisions are made, not necessarily individually, but acknowledging and recognizing the group dynamic that goes into this by giving people a process, by giving them a way to rationally approach what can be a hugely emotional situation, and by also using the whole college decision process as a learning experience, not only for the kids as they go through it, but for their parents as well. It can be a wonderful time to teach people to create a learning environment for really understanding the kinds of decision skills they'll need not only when they decide where to go to college, but also for all the decisions they'll make for the rest of their life. Steve.
Thank you. Steve?
I may stand.
Okay.
Thank you, Gaston. Thank you, Alston. Thank you, Cindy. My name is Steve Goodman. I'm an educational consultant and an author of College Admissions Together, It Takes a Family, a book that helps students and families cope with the stresses of the college admissions process. I'm pleased to be here at the College Board National Forum to discuss the terrific film that we just saw together. The students and families in the movie and in my book represent thousands of other students and families who, in my mind, have two big problems to contend with. Number one, the admissions process is inefficient, and these built-in inefficiencies cause students and families to become more stressed about the process than has to be the case. Number two, the financial aid process is much too unpredictable, and often too late to help many families with their financial planning. First, let's look at the inefficiencies. It's not uncommon for my students to have to write 10 different admissions essays, or mini-essays, in the course of one admission cycle. Yes, students should be able to write coherently about their thoughts and dreams, but why can't universities use one set of admissions essays so that students can focus on writing a few quality personal statements and then get back to concentrating on their academic courses? Perhaps we can use our time together here at the College Board to lay the groundwork for a commission to examine how much time it takes students to fill out required application forms and to satisfy the different deadlines and procedures associated with these applications. Students and families turn to me to help them navigate a process that seems unnecessarily opaque. And this opaqueness leads to my second point. Number two, we need a system whereby students and parents can receive more financial aid information earlier in the admissions season. Why not give students an estimate of their likely financial aid packages before they invest time and energy in applying to a particular school? If students were permitted to submit financial aid forms, say, 2 months before the start of their senior year, using the most recently completed tax returns up until that point, universities could use this information to give early non-binding estimates of the total out-of-pocket costs for that family. This would be a little like car rental companies that routinely estimate your total charges before you decide to rent a car. If students and families had this information ahead of time, it would affect where students apply, thereby alleviating much of the uncertainty and stress around the entire admissions process. Students would know which colleges were not going to be forthcoming with generous aid offers. On the other hand, students who knew they were likely to receive $15,000 or $25,000 in financial aid from College X or College Y would more thoroughly research the academic and extracurricular offerings at that particular school. And colleges would attract a greater diversity of applicants because students would now explore some schools that they might otherwise have overlooked. And a major stressor in the admissions process would be reduced, as students and their families would now have the planning tools to make an informed decision today, not 6 months from now. So as you travel back to your campuses, please reflect on our shared commitment to reduce the student and family stress that I've written about and that we've seen in this film. We need a more efficient college admissions process, and we need a system by which families can foresee their likely financial obligations earlier in the admission cycle. I'm glad we saw this excellent movie together. Let's now make the changes necessary so that in the future we'll see a film about an admissions process that is less stressful and more meaningful for students and colleges alike. Thank you again, and I look forward to our discussion.
Almost everyone in the film at some point seems to be pretty stressed out. Maybe, Cindy, you could talk about what you see as kind of the source of the stress and what we might do to lower your point of view.
Yeah. It's an interesting question, and there are many factors leading to the stress. One of the ones that I pick up on, and I think Carlos, the father of Molly, at one point says, I was going to say, well, there are a number of factors. It's really hard to pick the one. I mean, think about kids going through this. They basically submit themselves to judgment. We were talking before the panel, or earlier today, about how, as parents, it's judgment, or it feels like judgment on us as well. We've tried to be a good parent, and our children's success seems in some way to be a measure of our own. But one of the things that the parents and the kids alike, I think, feel is a real lack of control in the process. They feel as if forces beyond their control are determining their future. And this is one of the things that intrigues me about the whole process. And one of the ways, you know, as we look as a group for what's, how can we help families and kids reduce the stress, one is to shift the perception of control. And this goes back to this issue of empowerment for the kids and for their families as well.
Sure, and I think that the issues of control here are real. And families, particularly moms and dads, and you can't blame moms and dads. We often see this movie, and Austin, it's a great movie, but what I thought was fascinating about this is the first time I've ever seen this film in the presence of so many admissions people. So I've only seen this on my own computer. And what was really interesting was how everybody in this room was kind of rooting for certain kids and not rooting for other kids and feeling certain ways about certain parents. But you can't blame parents, and you know who you are, you can't blame parents for, they raised somebody for 17 years and then all of a sudden saying, you know, I'm done, it's over. Well, there's a little bit of a loss, there's a little bit of a mourning process here for a lot of families. And I think it's really important that we as people in the admissions community recognize that we can really do a lot to help families to go through this together. It's unrealistic to assume that after you've raised someone for 17 years, you're just going to say, well, good luck, see you, give me a call in every 2 weeks, and we'll deal with it from there. So a lot of the stress does come about from that realization. But then I think also some of the stress comes about from the fact that this process is inherently stressful, and that's what I alluded to in my opening statement. I think the process is too stressful, and I think we're all guilty of helping to perpetuate that. And so I would ask you to think about what can we all do as a community to reduce some of this stress. I mean, why does it have to be as complex as it is? Because I think that's what really adds to some of this. Yes, by definition, if there are X number of seats and there are 2 times X, there's going to be some stress associated with who can get those seats. But we can do that in a humane and fair way, I think.
Thank you, Steve. Leo made a decision in this film, if you can hear me back there, Leo made a decision in this film to give up his passion. And that was football, and so he could allocate more time to SAT prep. I'd like to ask the panelists, what did you think about this decision?
Well, and again, keep in mind, you all, I come at this from a decision analysis point of view, not as a college advisor. And as soon as I looked at that, I thought, boy, I'd like to know how that decision was made. I always think there's more behind than what we see. Not that I'm a skeptic in any way, but it's clear that Leo made decisions to keep some other things that he has a passion for, specifically his music. And it was interesting to me, and I'd be interested to know why of those two things, both of which, football and his music, both of which represents a significant commitment of time and obvious enjoyment for him, why one over the other?
I think there was a question in the far back, gentlemen.
Actually, more of a comment than a question. I just have to take exception to two things. One, I don't think admissions people should feel guilty for the complexity of this process. That's for me as an admissions person. Two, me as a parent, I think we actually can blame parents. You said we can't blame parents. I think we can. I think some parents do a whole lot better job supporting their kids through this process than other parents. To me, the saddest thing about the movie, almost as sad as the failing health of the mother, is that she is, of all the mothers in the movie, the one who comes off the best.
Yeah.
That's sad.
Right. I mean, I think that there is an opportunity as a community, and hopefully with the film we can do, is to get parents to re-examine their role. Because really what starts to happen at this age is the parent's role shifts from being the manager of their child to being the consultant to their child. And I think sometimes parents, and I have been through it a few times, lose perspective on that, that we're really there to help our children, to teach them, not to drive the decision ourselves. And if there's anything, that one thing that could come out of this film, I think that would be any kind of change we could help make. We would like to do that.
May I jump in there on the use of the word we?
We the filmmakers.
We the filmmakers, but also, if for those of you who are paying attention to the film carefully, we kept hearing the word we. And the parents kept saying, we were admitted to this school, we were waitlisted, we were not admitted. And I think that that's very dangerous language. And I think that we as a community should do our part to simply say, your son or daughter was admitted, your son or daughter was waitlisted, but you're simply the coach and the advisor. People always give me credit for so many things. They say, oh, you did a great job. Well, yeah, I may have done a great job, but I've done the job because the students are terrific students. And I think it's really important to give students the credit for what they've accomplished. And by when parents use the word we, I really think that that takes away from the accomplishments of the parent of the kids sometimes.
The woman in the blue had her hand up next.
Good afternoon. I have such great news for you. Number one is that there is a task force on admission to the 21st century, which is addressing almost everything you're talking about, complexity being a specific aspect of that task force's work. And they're hard at work at making sure that the perception of the complexity is lessened. Number two, I would ask you to look at all the college applications in America, colleges that are out there, and think of what percentage of them require an essay. There's such a small percentage. You know, and I think that the movie misrepresents the reality of the majority of Americans' experience with the college-going process. That most college students do not have to write one essay, let alone 12 or 13. That most college students don't apply to 12 or 13 schools. And that most students, college students, have a very simple application. And that there are things like common application to ACC, your common application, and sort of a come in and talk and we can admit your application. So many small public college, regional colleges and community colleges. So I think that there's so much greatness out there. Our focus on this elite 20%, if they feel that big, you know, distresses me because it makes everybody feel like there's this great
zero-sum kind of scenario.
And for most students, it's just not that bad.
Just as a point of reference, we actually followed 9 high school seniors. And these 4 happen to be the most well-formed stories that seem to draw as many points as we can do. Again, remember, I'm not the filmmaker, I'm the producer. The director made the choice of really telling the story as opposed to an educational piece. But I will tell you that we even found with the students who were not applying to elite schools that there was also a lot of stress. There was stress more over financial issues in those particular stories, and we wanted to include them, but then the film would be 3 hours long and you'd all fall asleep. So you have to kind of, as part of the artist's decision and the editor's decision, to cut it down. The woman in the salmon or pink, I can't tell from here.
I'm an admissions director. I'm also a parent of a daughter that's a junior in college. Uh-huh. I think the crux of the matter is, much different than when I went through the process, this is the first time many of these young people have been told no.
Right.
And admissions people become the brunt of, oh, well, you didn't want to go there anyway. They didn't want my child. And it's not. I mean, we tell students all the time, don't take this process so personally.
Right.
I think that's an important fact.
You're absolutely right. The woman next to Leo's advisor had a question for comment.
Hi, I'm the director of guidance from the school that Leo went to, and our caseloads are about 300 to 350.
Right.
And when seniors, that's seniors for one counselor. So, exactly, and that's the norm in our district. But when you say we got accepted, the parents help the parent. The bill always goes to the parent. It never goes to the child. Okay, the financial planning, we try to include our parents in the process because most of our children are first generation. So it really is important that we do say we. If we alienate the child from the root, the family tree, then we have a problem. What's going to happen to the child after they leave the public school system? Where's the support come from?
Well, I think that's a great comment. In fact, we were talking about this before the panel. I think one of the things that, particularly in public schools that have some of the issues that you're pointing out in terms of the ratios, one of the things I think that the work that you do is so important is if you could involve the parents in many more college nights and many more financial aid programs to open the eyes of parents to see what's going to be coming down the road. And I know you do some of that, but I think we should do even more of that, because that's exactly right. On one hand, so when I was saying about the we, I didn't mean everything should just be the student and the student and the student. And the fact that my whole book is about the combination. But I think we as a community really should figure out a little bit more, you know, what's appropriate? When is it appropriate to have certain discussions? For instance, I have a whole chapter in my book about money. When is it appropriate to raise the tuition issue with your child? Most students don't really have a good handle on what $15,000 or $25,000 means. I mean, they can feel $100 maybe, but they don't really know what that means. And so when do we have those discussions? When is it appropriate? When is it not? And I think that's the first line of offense and defense there are the public high school guidance counselors. So I salute you for the work that you're doing and just encourage you to have more of those parent nights.
And I would just like to comment on that just because in decision education, when I look at the college process, to me it's really an example of a group decision. And one of the benefits of this really is most of the significant decisions we'll make in our life, we don't make in a vacuum. And as a teaching opportunity for teaching kids how to make a group decision, there are lots of stakeholders in this decision. Mm-hmm. But one of the, again, when we put together our curriculum about decision-making in this context, one of the first things we talk about is having the discussion among the stakeholders about whose decision is it? Who are the decision makers? And to get that out on the table right from the start really can preempt a lot of distress later. Because there are different situations where, on the one hand, the kid thinks they're making the decision, and then they find out at the 11th hour that, no, they're not. Or the alternative, where the parent thinks they're doing something, but in fact, at the end, they just dump it all on the kid. And it's nice to get that model of decision-making defined early on.
The gentleman right here had his hand up.
Alston, I want to thank you very much for this, this film. When we come to a national conference like this, we're looking for takeaways. We're looking for things we can go back to our shop and talk about or implement or respond to or react to. And so I'm here now just brainstorming within me about, well, number one, where can I find the money to buy this film? But then number two, where and how can we implement it so that our students and parents can respond to it and benefit from it. I will tell you, I know that you said this is a chance for us to follow four students, but I'm a parent. So I was really following the parents, and one of the takeaways is Leo's mother. And I don't have a lot of Leo's mothers at my school, but I treasure the memories of Leo's mother in this film.
And I will just give you a little background. I took the, I guess it was a train up to Yonkers from Manhattan, and had the chance to screen the film with Leo's family. And in a Dominican family, that's like 30 people. And Leo's mom is a treasure, and she can really cook, and he's doing great. So it was a real pleasure to have him on this in this film. Just as a quick plug, we are in the process of discussing broadcast of the film with PBS and HBO and a number of other people. But we are actively selling the institutional copy. They said we could go ahead and do that. And we're about 75 or 80% finished with a discussion guide. Our experience is the film works really well with parents, and it works really well with students. It doesn't work well at all when parents and students are in the same room together. If you want to ensure that no one says anything, then do it in a mixed parent-student audience. No parent is likely to challenge no student is likely to challenge their parents over involvement in their lives, you know, in a group setting. That's just not going to happen. And conversely, parents are not going to go jump all over their kids in front of other people. So we found that this could generate some fabulous conversation among parents about what is the appropriate role for me to teach my child. I think that it's a teachable moment has become the new phrase in the media. I mean, it really is. And, you know, having been through it a couple of times, I wish I had actually thought about that, because I didn't do such a great job. I kind of muddled through. No one really talked to me about it, like Steve's book does, about me as a parent. Right behind you is another woman who's had her hand up. Then I'm going to turn to this side of the room.
That was going to be, you almost just answered my exact question. Right. That was, Austin, this is the second time I saw the film, and both times I laughed, both times I cried, and both times I sat here wondering, because I watched it with a group of colleagues, and we can laugh at those people, and we've had parents like that and students like that, but I really wondered how it played to a parent, and I was envisioning doing a parent-student evening with popcorn, but now I'd say show it
in separate rooms. Because I showed it in a mixed audience at Lovett School in Atlanta. My friend, old friend, is the headmaster there, and most of the kids ended up leaving. And once they left, the parents started opening up and talking. And I mean, one mother was nearly in tears and just said, "How do I not become that?" I wasn't entirely sure how to answer that question, because I think maybe the die is cast by the time they're 16 or 17, but I think there is a great opportunity to work with parents. Over on this side, this gentleman, yes.
I guess that's my question. Molly's in particular, have they seen it? What was Molly's family's reaction? Was there self-reflection? Were they embarrassed? Were they angry? Were they? How was the screening of the other families?
I did that screening with parents, too. And I will tell you, I anticipated it being a lot worse than it was. And they all laughed about it and thought it was great. Self-awareness is an interesting concept. I mean, but I will tell you, the other thing, in fairness to Vicky, Janet, Molly's mom, the thing you should, that I've learned, I'm not a filmmaker, I'm a business person who's married to a filmmaker. And I've learned that the edit suite can very definitely manipulate what you think about. So I will tell you, Janet is a really lovely person, and she wasn't upset. She actually loved it. But I think we could, sometimes the editor made choices to not include things that made her look more favorable than she was. Gentleman with the yellow tie.
Yes, and I appreciate the film, because I think there's a vast number of teachable moments in here, and many of them are teachable parental moments about what you say or do or how you support or what you project onto your child and how they carry that with them throughout this whole experience. But I also think there's some good things for us on the other side, in particular the college side in an American society. What we've done with this process in terms of making it seem like it's the holy grail to be achieved, and if you don't get there, you somehow have lost something. And the fact that Molly could take no pleasure—Molly's girl—could take no pleasure in her achievements until she got to school and found that it could be accepting. But she didn't want to celebrate. She didn't want to talk about college. And I contrast that with what you did with Lindsay. And I thought your comment was right about her mother. But I think her mother would have been that way had she been ambulatory and engaged, because she clearly had put her children front and center and loving them and accepting them for what they were while she had her cancer. So there's a lot of teachable moments, and I appreciate that. But as a society, we have to think about, do we really need to recruit so many more people so we can have such a selectivity ratio?
May I jump on that? I think that was a terrific comment, sir. I think you're right, and I think there is a weakness here of a student who is going to the University of Virginia, which is a terrific school, and you're right, there wasn't any joy in the film, and it seemed like she was almost settling for that. And I think that that is sad, and I think that what we should do as a community is to kind of encourage students to enjoy what it is that they do and do well, and encourage them to do more of that. Because yes, it's true that it's in a lot of ways it's better to go to Yale than not to go to Yale, but it's also true that I think it's better to enjoy the process along the way. And I'm the first person who will be glad to help you with your applications to Yale or somewhere else, but I think it's really important to focus on the road along the way. Because if kids aren't enjoying it, and they don't feel connected to their lives, and they don't feel connected to their own accomplishments, then I think we're doing a really great disservice, not only to them today, but to them 20 and 30 years down the road when they become adults, who then never really had the time to develop and explore what it is that they need and ought to be exploring. Thank you for that comment.
The gentleman with the beard.
I guess in the era of equity and access, I would pray that every student had to choose between Villanova and Virginia.
We have someone from Villanova.
My comment is more, have you shown this film to an audience of juniors in high school, and what was their response to this?
It was interesting. I'd say that we've done it several times. I think that without a conversation, I think it would scare them. With the conversation was to say, that's as worse as it gets in terms of stress. Now let's talk about what we can do so we don't get in that situation. So I think it really depends on the kind of conversation you have. I'm not sure I'd just show up to them without some conversation. Yes, and we have one of the experts here.
I had Leo, right. And then I had Ezekiel.
Ezekiel.
And Ezekiel definitely was not stressed.
No. Well, Ezekiel was asleep in three quarters of the movie.
He did not stress at all. And I said, oh, Ezekiel. And he said, don't worry, I'm not going there like my brother. And I said, I'm not worried. I said, but, and he wound up going also away, so Mama is now alone.
Yeah.
He's, I think, in
Union College.
Yes.
And the big surprise, I mean, this is, I did not see any of the filming until it was all done, and I went up to visit with the family, and Ezekiel is, believe it or not, he's not asleep, and he's actually quite the ladies' man. That was really awesome. He's really,
he's,
you know,
he's
really
okay. Shape, and that's how he was all the time.
Yes, back here.
My question is for you, Steve. In talking about stress and parent stress, and in terms of what you do as a profession, do you think that could quite possibly add to the stress for parents and students?
Sure.
I'm a high school guidance counselor. I hate to put you on the spot, but I'm a high school guidance counselor at a private school, and people like you give us some trouble sometimes. You know, what you may be saying may be discordant with what we're saying, and then the student is kind of left really between private counselor, parent, high school guidance counselor, and these poor kids are left not knowing where to turn.
I think that's a very fair question. One of the things that I find really interesting about what I do is whenever I travel overseas, people are always convinced that I'm a spy. Because I tell people what I do, and they just kind of look at me and they say, no, that's not really possible. Really? You do what? And so it doesn't really seem real to them. I think, right, in a perfect world, the fact that I exist is testament to the fact that something's really not right with the system. Either that students feel that they're not getting what they want from their counselor, either that the parents feel that they want more. And no one's not to blame. And I think that it's a very fair question. You know, one can also make the case about the U.S. News rankings, right? That the U.S. News rankings make on one hand, encourage the horse race. You could also make the case that the U.S. News rankings provide third-party analysis of university programs so that way parents don't have to spend money on things that they're not going to get, or students aren't going to get when they really go to College X or College Y. And I don't mean to sit up here and say that I'm not guilty of any of this or all of that. I think we all share some of this responsibility. I've been doing this for a long time. I know many of the people in this room, and you're right. But to get to your question about what happens when there are different views in admissions, that does unfortunately happen sometimes. And sometimes what I have to do is call some of the people in this room, and I've had conversations with some people in the room about these issues, and we resolve them. And we say, you know, I view X, Y, Z situation, and you view A, B, C situation. And I think that's when the communication should be there. And then to speak to the issue that the woman mentioned, your colleague next to you a minute ago, about the task force, I think that the task force and the commissions that we put together, I think, really benefit from having the widest diversity possible within the admissions community. So that way we have all these voices and in the discussions and make sure that the students are not harmed by hearing too many disparate messages. So thank you for that question.
I have a question right here.
I know you said that you had originally filmed the 9 students.
Right.
And only some of them were included in this film.
Right.
Is there any discussion of having, perhaps in 500 words or less, part 2, and looking at some of these other students? Because I think about that student who's like the average student, the B-plus student, and that's a whole other dynamic in terms of the college search process, as well as now, of course, in lieu of all the financial struggles, you know, how does that play into it? And then, of course, looking at the role of the community college and putting them in the limelight as being a great alternative for a lot of students, whether it be for financial reasons or really for academic reasons, and really bringing that to the fore. Therefore, all students knowing there's a place for them,
yeah,
but you've got to be able to do maybe a little bit of the homework. And I think that will also relieve some of the stress if they know there's almost a school out there for everybody.
Yeah.
And everyone can pursue higher education.
If you're from a foundation and would like to fund part 2, I would be delighted to talk to you. We have a number of interesting outtakes from the other 5 students. Again, I said they really weren't well-formed, as well-formed stories, but I mean, there's one particular story where a student basically quit working his senior year, had all D's and F's, and had a dilemma. He and his mother had a dilemma about whether to let the university know that his grades had gone downhill or to hide it from him and try to get the grades up. Of course, the university found out about it and withdrew his admission. And that, so we have nice little vignettes in there that work pretty well, but I'm not sure there will necessarily be a second story. We're probably going to do the bonus footage. A lot of it depends on our broadcast partner. And I'm going to a film festival next weekend, and hopefully we'll find another one while we're there. Question here.
Well, just kind of a comment to feedback on some of those comments. I think, too, even with your bright students, you have to really make sure that their application profile is well-balanced, because it's very hard for somebody who's been very top of the line their whole high school career life. They apply to 4 schools like the young man did, and he got into one. I mean, that's 25% pat on the back for a lot of years, you know, hard work. And so I really think it falls on us as counselors sometimes to make sure that that is a wide range of schools that they apply to. And that name brand, that's not all it's cracked up to be.
Well, and there was a piece that we actually took out of the film, Michael, the student from Westminster Schools. And I think his advisor's in here, or maybe she left. Okay. Nancy Bean's back there somewhere. Michael gets into Georgetown, and what you didn't really see in the film is Michael really has his heart set on doing something in international affairs and going to the Foreign Service. Is there a better school than Georgetown in the whole world in that particular choice? Yet he's still anxious about Harvard all the way through the summer about that, and we wanted to put that in there to really highlight that sometimes the big prestige school like that is really not the right place to go. You ought to go somewhere else. I mean, not that Georgetown's a big drop off or anything. You know, but,
may I comment on that? I think that there are 2 messages here. That, yes, the Georgetown-Harvard message is there, but, again, I don't think we're all innocent completely on that front. Because think about a lot of the private schools in this room. Think about what you put in your brochures. You know, how many people got into such and such schools, and so what universities are you advertising for future students to come to your private schools? And I don't think the colleges are so are innocent of this either, right? Because colleges say X amount of our students went to such and such business school or law school or medical school. And I'm not innocent of that either. On my website, it clearly says, you know, here are the schools that my students have gotten into. So I think that students are hearing 2 messages. On one hand, they're hearing the message that go to Georgetown because it's the right school for you. But then they're also hearing these other messages of the prestige of other schools. And I think that, unfortunately, is the way our society is.
Yeah. I'll have to acknowledge Nancy in the back.
I just wanted to say that in Michael's case particularly, and Wade Boggs was actually his counselor, and you saw Wade there. Wade spent a lot of time. We have a real thing in our school about kids having to have what we call foundation schools. We really try to stay away from the idea of safety schools. And we got that from Gary Ripple, who said, put your schools on a horizontal continuum rather than a vertical one, so that you, if this door closes, you go through this door, so forth. So we stress that a lot. In Michael's case, Wade had a real tough time getting Michael and his family to look at foundation schools. So I think, you know, I think all of us, that the process is complex. And I think by seeing this, you can't see the whole story about what happens. But I think, I hope all of us try really hard to get kids to get a range of schools, to understand, as Mildred sort of indicated about kids taking it personally, to understand that this process does not define them. The results simply do not define them in terms of who they are as individuals. I find the movie fascinating. I saw it at NACAC too, and heard the criticism of these kids are all ultimately headed to what might be perceived as elite schools, and the fact that it was a compelling story in terms of what ultimately motivated these four kids to be chosen. But I do think that it really has a lot of merit, particularly with having parents discuss it and so forth. So we bought an institutional copy, and we're definitely going to work with our parents and so forth, because sometimes some of ours are rather hovering, shall we say.
Having been one of Nancy's parents, I can tell by testimony. Yes.
One of the things that I really like about it is what it shows about kids' resiliency skills. I mean, I think the process, I don't think it needs to be easier per se. I just think we need to understand the population that we're dealing with, the kids who got trophies just for participating in things. And I think that's probably why they put so much of their self-worth into this decision, is because they've always just been awarded, kind of like you praise everyone, you praise no one type of thing. But I think it's so important that, I don't think, if we are in this to educate them, because I believe that's what we're here to do, I think this process is a great, full of teachable moments of, in life, there are times when you don't have any control over situations. You are full of unknowns, and that bad things that happen don't mean the end. It's actually just a different path. And so that's what I really love, the showing, you know, the student who had the most personal trauma going on in her life was the least excited, I think, about her admissions decision, because I think she understood, I think her motivations for going there were unique in and of themselves, but I think she got a few things that maybe some of the other kids didn't.
Other questions?
Can I say something? Just, it's interesting, because when we teach decision skills for kids, we carefully distinguish between decisions and outcomes. And it's interesting because this is such a big thing for them, and in many ways part of the pain comes from this is the first time that they really have to define themselves. And an easy way to define yourself is, I go to X school, preferably the highest on the, you know, U.S. News and World Report ranking they can come up with. Or at least that's one way to do it. But the outcome is something different. And one of the things that we work for is to help kids have confidence in their decision, so that they're not doing what Molly does, which is, I'm not sure I picked the right thing. To give them the tools to make a good decision, to say I've made the best decision, and then they can go off to the school, and you know what? They might hate it. But then that's another decision. And so they've done their job, they know who they are, they've identified their values, and they're prepared to face that next challenge, rather than having, you know, be left completely at sea.
And Cindy, that's exactly right, because when you identify your own values, I think now you're going a long way to figuring out what this process means to you. That's exactly right. And I think I spend a lot of time, not I think, I do spend a lot of time with families, helping them and to make sure that to understand that the mom's values, the dad's values, and the student's values are not always the same. And sometimes it's important to have these discussions. You shouldn't assume that just because you have a particular set of values that your spouse does or that your child does, and that's a great point. So I would urge everybody to kind of have those family discussions and be prepared to ask about what your values are, because then that's the lens. And Austin, you made a comment about that exactly, about separating the kids and the parents. And sometimes you have to do that when you're starting to deal with the sensitive issues, because a lot of kids are going to be really reluctant to contradict their parents in front of their parents. And so if you do that in a gentle way, but a forceful way, I think we as counselors can do some very good work.
Gentlemen at yellow top.
We like to talk a lot about match versus prize in our office, in my high school. And the only time I saw match being elevated was when Leo goes to try and find, goes to see a school, and he says, well, this is the match. And the young lady who talks about initially her criteria for wanting to go to Wellesley, and she talks about it as a match. Now, colleges also turn around and look at the students to think, are you a good match with us? And I thought Molly got into her biggest problem because she was in the hunt for prizes, or at least Janet was.
Right.
And consequently, she wasn't a real stakeholder in her own future. And the family needs to step back and say, is this a good match? I wish you had left the part in about the kid from Georgetown being interested in international relations, because now it makes a whole lot of sense why he got in there as opposed to why he got turned down at the other places. But you know, lists where students need to apply to, whether it be called foundation schools or we call it likely schools, wherever you are on that list, they all have to kind of have some similarity in terms of what the student's interested in. You have to look for a match.
This issue of match and particularly ownership, when you talk about Molly, one of the things when I first saw this, and again, I look at it through a frame of decision making, I'm thinking, this was never Molly's decision. I mean, I would, and it's very easy to judge as, you know, somebody watching this, and I know it's been edited, and I'm sure they're wonderful, but just the story that was told, you know, Molly's parents, it felt to me like they bullied her into going to UVA. And we've talked about how this isn't a personal thing, but we know kids take it personally, and again, parents do too. So there, Villanova, which is a great school, is saying, we love you, and we're giving you $25,000. And the parents don't even seem to, they sort of say, oh yeah, that's nice, but here's this great thing. And it may have been important for Molly to have that recognition, and possibly more important than to have the name of UVA. And UVA is a great school, they're all great schools. But I did wonder about that choice and that match. Yeah.
We'll take two more questions, one here and one over there.
I love the documentary. For me, it made me want to go back and get a fifth degree, wish I could go back to college life. But I have a charter school in Florida, and my students, the demographics there, my target area are inner city students. The parents are hardly involved. Some of them are dropouts, and so on and so forth. And I have some parents who are interested in their kids, and they take a vested interest. But in watching this, my heart sank after it was all over, because my kids will look at it, but then they might get up and walk out because it doesn't relate to them. With the exception of, I have one student who lost her mother, or who doesn't have a mother, and she probably could relate to the young lady who went to Wellesley. So my main question, I think I might have two questions. My first question is, did you, in doing a screening, did you show it to an inner city population to see what their response would have been? And my second question is, and it's kind of related to what the young women said in the back, what do you say to those students who don't have much of a self-worth? They might know that they want to go to college or to a university, and in my case, I am the guidance counselor, I am the principal, I'm the role model, I'm a lot of things, I wear many hats every day. So I don't have a guidance counselor, and my students don't have a lot of inspiration or role models to say, this is what she can do. They have the idea that they want to go to college, but then it's the steps to getting there, the money is not there, they don't know what to do, and their self-worth isn't there. So if they apply to a college and they're not accepted, they're not going to feel like a Molly and a Mike and a Leo. They're going to feel like everybody's told me no, and now this college is too, so I'm going to give up. So I think I asked my second part question.
Let me answer the first part by asking my colleague, Catherine Wigginton, to speak. She did show this at a school in the D.C. area. Maybe you could speak up so everybody can hear you.
Sure. So I have the same concern about showing the film to that school. It's in Prince George's County, Maryland, where I think everybody there is on free and reduced lunch. I'm not sure what the college acceptance rate is, but it's very, very low. You know, they have AP classes, but it's generally, you know, most of the kids aren't going to college, or they might think about going to community college, and a lot of times they'll go for a year and then drop out. And so I showed it to a class of sophomores at the very end of their sophomore year, and they actually really related to a lot of this. They related to Lindsay because her grandparents were the strongest force in her life, and a lot of them had that going on in their lives. And Leo, of course, his story really resonated with them. And I was worried about them being, you know, just sort of turning off and not paying attention to it because of the types of schools that these kids were applying to. And that's what a lot of people in the admissions profession ask us about. Well, look, like, these are all very highly selective schools. These kids aren't going to relate to this. But they actually were so new to this whole process that they didn't even know what a lot of these schools were. I mean, even, you know, you were in D.C., but they were asking them what University of Virginia was. And what happened was it turned into, after showing the film, they all loved it. They were cheering and laughing and yelling at Holly and things like that. They loved Leo. And at the end of it, they just started asking us a ton of questions about, okay, well, what do I do? What should I do first? You know, I dropped out of school my freshman year, but, you know, what can I say about that? And could that be part of my college application? And they just wanted to, it became a big college counseling session. And so I found that it's more of an adult question about whether or not these schools are system-selected. Because the kids just love to see other kids going through this process.
And I would also point you to the College Summit. Might be a resource for your school. CollegeSummit.org that works with creating a college-going culture in disadvantaged schools. I'll take one more question, and then our time is up.
Becky. There's a great comment about Molly. And I mean, she's attaching her self-worth to this whole process.
Yeah.
And what, I mean, maybe it's a question to all of us here in the room as high school and college counselors, what can we do in bridging that discussion with parents? How can we start that conversation with parents so that this poor young girl is not attaching who she is and what her worth is to getting into X, Y, or Z? I think that's something that we really need to figure out, is how we can broach that discussion with the parents.
Well, I would say that I was in contact with an organization that does a lot of college fairs, and I suggested that they actually run a separate track for parents and not allow the parents to go into the college fair with their kids and to show this film to them instead. I didn't get very far, but I thought it was a great idea. So we'll be happy to stay around and answer any questions. Thank you all very much for staying. Thank you.